The whole world is watching. The whole world is watching. If you're familiar with that phrase, you know that it comes out of the protests in Chicago in 1968 as the Democratic National Convention was held in Chicago, and protesters from all over the country gathered to speak out against the United States' involvement in Vietnam. And as they protested throughout the city, Mayor Daley and the other powers that be sent out armed police to disperse the protesters, and often using violent methods, the methods of their clubs and of gases and of jail. They dispersed the protesters, and as they did so, the crowds chanted, "The whole world is watching." The point, I think, of the chant was that they wanted everyone to see the lengths to which people would go to reinforce and to protect their power and privilege and prosperity. This is the same phenomenon that we've been watching, the world has been watching for 2,000 years. And we've been witnessing it as we read and proclaim and study the gospel narratives, in particular the narratives of the arrest and trial and crucifixion of Jesus. And in those narratives, we see how the world responds in the presence of God. And it looks like a cross. You see, there are a lot of things going on in the cross. But one of the key realities, one of the key parts of Jesus' mission in accepting the cross is that Jesus exposes the darkness of the empire. On the cross, we see exposed the true colors of the empire that infiltrates and influences the hearts and societies of our world. And not only does Jesus expose the darkness of the empire on a large scale, he does it by exposing the false hopes that we hold on to in our hearts. And we're going to look at three of these false hopes as we find them in these gospel accounts in Luke 22 and 23. The first false hope that Jesus exposes in our hearts is the false hope that we have in the sword. As the soldiers come to arrest Jesus and Judas hands Jesus over to the soldiers, Peter takes up a sword and they ask Jesus, "Should we? Is this time? Is this what you had in mind? Is this the time for the revolution?" They say, "Lord, should we strike with the sword?" And then one of them, before even waiting for an answer, struck the slave of the priest and cut off his right ear. But Jesus said, "No more of this." And not only does he stop the violence, but he heals the man who's come to arrest him. And what Jesus is saying in this story, in this moment where the rubber meets the road, is that violence does not bring about the kingdom of God. No matter how righteous the cause might be, violence does not bring about the kingdom of God. There has never been a more just war, a more righteous and just reason to take up the sword as the arrest of Jesus and defending Jesus. And yet, Jesus says no. Violence does not bring about the kingdom of God. And so we look at how this false hope works its way into our hearts and our society. And if you look, you see a graph in front of you that shows that in 2015, the United States spent almost $600 billion on our military. And as the chart shows you, that's more than the next 10 countries in the world combined that we spent on our military. And whether this is for just causes or not, and we could discuss how just and righteous those causes are that we invest our military in, what we have to recognize is that's a lot of investment. That's a lot of hope put in the sword. And we have to be cognizant of is that the sword is so often and so easily becomes the empire's weapon that's used for the empire's interest. And that's why Jesus says that is enough, no more. Jesus exposes our false hope in the sword. Jesus also exposes our false hope in the systems of the world. And we like to think that those systems will protect us, but so often they're not built to protect us. We see Jesus as he's passed around among the powers that be. He goes to the puppet King Herod, and Herod just wants a private show. He thinks his privilege and his power demands that Jesus show him something and entertain him, and Jesus remains silent in front of Herod. He won't play the game. And then he goes to the Gentile Pilate, and Pilate does his political calculations, and rather than protecting what is just, he ends up just washing his hands for his own political interests. And we see even the Jewish democracy, you know, democracy, we think, you know, put it to the vote of the people. And so Pilate does that, and he says, all right, I'm going to let you vote. You can have the zealot Simon, who has taken up the sword for the righteous cause, as many of them thought. We'll release Simon or Barabbas, the zealot, or we'll release to you Jesus. And so democracy, the people's voice, gets to choose, and democracy chooses wrong. And what Jesus exposes is that so often the systems are designed not for the sakes of justice or God's kingdom or any of the, or to protect the vulnerable, but they're designed to benefit the powerful and the prosperous and the privileged, and to reinforce the empire. And we see this in our own history, in our own story as a society, as a nation, that we have, just as one example, we've used our legal system first to enslave and then to segregate. From slavery to Jim Crow to legal practices like redlining and other things like that that have segregated our society. And we can see it even today. It's an impact even today. You see in the chart there that, just one chart, but there's a number of others that we could use, that people of color, and in particular African Americans, are arrested and charged at greater rates and sentenced to longer terms than white people for the same crimes. This chart is about drug-related crimes. And it's not that African Americans use drugs at a significantly higher rate, it's just that they're arrested and charged and sentenced to longer sentences for using them. And that's how the system has been built and how it was designed for many years. And we need to continue to work against the ways our systems fail us, not just trust them that they're going to protect us. Jesus exposes our false hope in the systems as he shows what those systems are really about. And finally, Jesus exposes the false hope of the self. What we see is Jesus' silence. He chooses not to defend himself. And we like to think that if we're just good enough or loved enough or accepted enough or prosper enough, that we'll be safe, that we will have all of those things if we just do the right thing. And Jesus explodes that myth. They say to Jesus on the cross, they say, the people stood by and said, he saved others, let him save himself if he is the Messiah of God, his chosen one. Their assumption is, if he is righteous, if he is who he says he is, then God will save him. That he can almost save himself by doing the right thing. And Jesus explodes that myth, that if we are just good enough, that we will be loved and accepted and prosperous. And that is false. Because the people, the empire, has already decided that no matter what Jesus does, the systems of evil cannot abide the presence of their one true king. And Jesus exposes our false hope in the sword and the system and the self. And in rejecting these, he doesn't play the game. He doesn't put his hope in any of these things. In rejecting the sword and the system and the self to save him and save the world, Jesus exposes the darkness of our hearts and the empire in all of us. You see, again, it's not just the big picture, the powers and the powerful and the privileged and the prosperous who are captive to the empire. It's each of us who are captive to the empire. We see that in Exodus 14, which was read earlier. God has liberated the slaves from Egypt. The Hebrew people are wandering now through the desert, and Pharaoh and the king, the powers that be are coming to get them. And what do they say? Take us back. We would have been better off as slaves in Egypt. Right? So it's not just the powerful, it's all of us who have accepted the myth that the empire can protect us and save us. And we go back in our story. We look at the sin of Eve. It was the hope in the self, that she took it upon herself to save and protect and provide for herself. And she takes the fruit from the tree rather than listening to God. It was the sin of Cain, who took up the sword. He didn't have a sword, he took up a rock. But it's the sin of putting his hope in the sword to protect himself and to prosper himself at the expense of his brother. It's the sin of Babel, as the community gathers together and they say, we don't want to trust God's promises not to flood this earth again and protect us and provide for us, so we're going to protect for and provide and promote ourselves. This is the story. Rather than rely on God, we take up the sword and the systems and the self. The sin at the heart of humanity, which is the heart of the empire, is the desire to be God rather than to trust God. And all of the evils of the empire out there are the evils that begin in our hearts and take up residence in here. And that's why the true prophets who come to question and to challenge and to expose the empire don't just threaten the powers that be. They make us uncomfortable too. Even as those who are not in the 1% of power, privilege, and prosperity, maybe. It's still threatening to us because we have bought into those lies. And as long as the empire's evils remain hidden, so do the evils in our own hearts. And so we do the empire's work and lash out against the prophets and those who are challenging the false hopes that reside in each of our hearts. And so, sisters and brothers, we need to look hard at the cross. We need to look long and hard at the cross, not just as a portal that allows us to escape into some heavenly paradise, but we need to look at the cross as a commentary on our own world, on our own hearts, and all of the ways the empire seduces us to put our trust in the systems and the self and the sword rather than put our trust in God. And what that means, usually for us, I think, is listening to the voices of those who make us the most uncomfortable. We need to listen to the voices of those who have been trampled by the empire, who don't fit the empire's story, and thus they're marginalized. And we, and the empire wants us to see them as failures, but really they're the ones who can expose the lies of the empire. The voices of Martin Luther King Jr., for instance, who didn't just have this great and inspiring dream, but who challenged, as he called them, the giant triplets in our society of racism and materialism and militarism. And that's what got him killed. We need to listen to the voices of the people of color in our society who are profiled in so many ways and treated differently. We need to listen to their stories about where the empire is failing. We need to listen to the voices of the Native peoples or the First Nations peoples who are right now today in North Dakota protesting the construction of this pipeline that puts them in danger, their water supply in danger, their sacred grounds in danger. We need to listen to their voices because the empire has silenced those voices time and time and time again. We need to listen to the voices of people in other countries and listen to how they perceive our nation and our society. Because sometimes it's like telling a fish it's in water. The fish doesn't realize it's in water. It's just, that's it for them. We need to listen to outsiders' voices to help us see our own blind spots as a society and as a nation. And I realize that all of this is difficult for many of us to see. It's really difficult for us to see the empire all around us in our society and even more in our own hearts. And that's what the empire wants. It wants to remain hidden. But the bigger issue is not that it's difficult for us to see it, it's that most of us don't want to see the ways the empire has infiltrated our society and infiltrated our hearts. And so we look at the cross because it's the cross and the events leading up to the cross that don't allow us to close our eyes to the evils of the empire out there or the evils of the empire in here, the false hopes in our hearts. As we look at the cross, as we look at Jesus in his last moments, we see what it means to be truly human and to put our trust and our hope in the one true God. Because Jesus doesn't play the games of the empire. The empire convinces us that we need it. That is the empire's first strategy, to convince us that we need the empire, and thus to accept quote-unquote necessary evils. The empire wants to convince us that we need the sword if we're going to have a better world, so that the sword can protect us from evil and conquer for good. The empire wants to convince us that we need our economic system to be strong, that we need the wealthy to be wealthier so that they can create jobs for those of us down at the bottom. The empire wants to convince us that we need to prove ourselves, our rightness, our worthiness somehow, to deserve the fruits of the empire. The empire wants to convince us that we need the sword and the systems and the self to survive and thrive and be happy and fulfilled. And so, friends, I hope you see this is why the battle is not against flesh and blood. It's against the evil that works its way not only into the hearts of the powerful and the privileged and the prosperous, but into each of our individual hearts. It's not just in the systems, it's in our own hearts. And so this sermon isn't, I hope you hear it, it's not anti-government, it's not anti-business. It's not anti any of these institutions individually. It's anti the spirit that justifies trampling our neighbors for our own sake and convincing us that it's necessary to trample our neighbors rather than to lay down our lives and to love our neighbors as ourselves. Jesus doesn't play the empire's game. Jesus shows that he has no need for the empire. He doesn't need the sword. He doesn't need the system. He doesn't need to prove himself. And it's only when someone refuses to play that game that the empire and the evils of the empire are exposed for what they are. It's only when someone has the courage to lift up the stories of those who are being trampled by the empire and say, "This is not okay." It's only when someone has the courage to unmask the idolatries that have snuck into the empire and our hearts unnoticed. It's only when someone who has the imagination to think outside of the categories and the questions and the debates of the empire, where the empire then shows its true colors. It's only then that the empire comes out of the shadows and lashes out to defame and to dehumanize and ultimately to destroy those who seek to expose it. You see, Jesus could have taken up the sword and defeated the powers that were arresting him and crucifying him. Jesus could have outsmarted the system. Jesus could have argued for his own rightness and the empire's and Pilate's and Herod's and the Jewish leaders' wrongness. But that would have been playing the game. Instead, Jesus does none of those because he's put his hope in none of those places. Instead, Jesus abandons himself to both the empire's wrath and God's resurrection power. You see, because if Jesus had defended himself, if Jesus had taken up the sword or the system, worked the system or defended himself, we would have known that God was clever or powerful. But we would not have known that God is love. And it is the cross, and only the cross, where we see both the true extent of the empire's evil and the true extent of God's love. And so, in the cross then, in these narratives that we've read today, Jesus teaches us how to engage in the polis. This brings us back to our Politics of Jesus series. How does Jesus engage the polis? I think there are three characteristics we learn about how we engage the polis from Jesus facing the powers that be. The first characteristic is that we must be contemplative. What I mean by that is that we must be willing to look inward at our own hearts, to look honestly at the ways we are putting our hopes and relying on things other than God. And when we're uncomfortable because someone's pointing out some of those things, some of those false hopes and some of those idolatries, we need to take a moment to be still and listen and bring those before God and say, how am I trusting in the sword or the self or the system rather than the salvation that only God can provide and the shalom and the peace that only God can bring? So we need to be contemplative. And second, we need to be courageous. And by courageous, I mean that this comes after our contemplation, that out of our contemplation and examining the ways in which the empire has worked its way into our hearts and our society, that we then speak that truth in the face of the empire, that we expose the darkness of the empire and the games that the empire wants us to play, and we put those out there no matter what we get from that. The ridicule or the backlash or the people calling us unpatriotic or traitorous or that we don't love our country or that we don't fit this tribe or that tribe or put labels on us, that we have the courage to speak that truth about how we have bought into the lies that only seek to preserve and protect the power and the privilege and the prosperity of some at the expense of others. So we're contemplative, we're courageous, and finally we are cruciform. What does that mean? What does that word mean? It means that our politics are shaped by the cross. That we want to inspire the imaginations of people for a better world, a world that is more shaped by the love and grace of God. But if we don't convince the world that we are willing to face the empire's violence, so that the true heart of the empire can be seen. And it may come to that on small scales or large scales. That when we fight back, it just darkens the empire even more. It just obscures the darkness of the empire. It's when we take up the cross that the true nature of the empire can be seen. And so we then look at some of these images that have inspired true change because they have exposed the heart of the empire. So we look at an image like this one from Arkansas, as this young black woman is the first to integrate into her school, and all around her you see the anger and the darkness of the empire that doesn't want this new society, this new integrated society, to become reality. And as she calmly walks into that building, as she takes the anger and the ridicule and the emotional violence of the people, we see the darkness of the empire, and we see what we're working against. Or this picture from Birmingham, Alabama, as African American people and allies protested segregation there and Jim Crow there. We see the hoses being turned on them. We see the empire's true colors when it's being challenged and threatened. Or, a little bit closer to home, we have this image of from Kent State University. As the war was protested there, and we see it's a hard picture to look at, but it shows the lengths to which the empire will go in the face of it being challenged. Or we go farther around the world and you see this image from Tiananmen Square, the one man standing up in front of the tanks, and we see the violence of the empire for what it is. Or if we want to go a little bit more modern and contemporary, we see this image from the protests at the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we see these protesters who are trying one more time to stand up for their land and their people and their sacred lands. And you see the tanks in the background moving in to disperse. Or we see this image of Coptic Christians about to be martyred at the hands of ISIS. Their last words, Lord Christ. You see, it is only as these individuals and groups are willing to take up their cross rather than fight back against it, playing the empire's games, it is only then that the empire's darkness is exposed rather than obscured. Now, some of you this morning might be feeling some resistance in your hearts right now to something I've said. And maybe you feel like this whole idea is being naive to the realities of evil in the world, or maybe even disrespectful to institutions that are genuinely trying to do good. And I'm open to that conversation. But those feelings of resistance could also be the anxiety that all of us feel when our false hopes are exposed and our idols are smashed. And we're called out of the false hopes of sword and system and self to radically put our trust in God and the way of Christ. Because truly following Jesus' politics is not just about taking on ideas. It's about taking up his cross as well. Amen.